We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stress upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
People are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they're attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan, the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. It's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache for the Palestinians, it's difficult.
The unrest also sparked hostilities between Gaza-based Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces as the two sides exchanged fire early on Thursday. The lack of mainstream media attention, despite the shocking footage which has emerged, has equally infuriated many onlookers.
It's not just me. Every Palestinian have been hit. With the fact that international law is very selective. The application of international law depends on the interests of these countries. And, you know, the major powers insist to keep putting Israel above the law, to keep shielding Israel from international scrutiny and international sanctions. And if this does anything, it actually exposes that the world is not serious about its own rules and laws.
This isn't the first time that the Israeli regime has conducted acts of aggression against Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan in occupied Palestine. However, global awareness of Israel's crimes is at an all-time high, and with future protest action planned over the next days and weeks here in London, the global reaction to what's been going on is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
Whispers with God on a night that's believed by Muslims to be a time when their wishes are fulfilled. It's called Laylatul Ghadr, or the Night of Destiny. Muslims observe the occasion every year in the month of Ramadan, when they congregate at religious sites to pray and make wishes. To Iranians, no place is better than the shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Reza in the city of Mashhad to keep vigil on the occasion.
Words cannot describe my feelings tonight. It's a night of destiny when God has promised to listen to our prayers. It's a night which the Quran says is better than 1,000 months. I'm so happy to be in Imam Reza's shrine on this divine night.
After 2 years, we once again can visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, our beloved Imam, and that on the night of destiny. I wish that God will eradicate the coronavirus once and for all, for us to be able to live peacefully and visit our holy sites.
Islamic scriptures say Laylatul Ghadr marks the night when the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. The Quran says on this night, angels descend on earth to listen to the prayers of worshippers.
We believe that on the night of destiny, angels come to earth upon God's order. The Quran says in its verses that the book was revealed to the Prophet on this night, and the angels will stay on earth till dawn. That's why we never miss out on this holy night and come here to pray.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, But all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's the first time after more than 2 years that the Night of Destiny is marked without serious concerns over the coronavirus. And this has attracted this huge number of pilgrims to the shrine of Imam Reza to once again mark Laylatul Qadr en masse and at the same time reunite with their eighth Imam after 2 years. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
Violence, oppression, and desecration of holy sites. Just more of the Ramadan reminders that Palestinians continue to live under occupation and suffer daily injustices. More than ever, international solidarity, especially in an age of social media, is important. With the atrocities being committed against Palestinians, raising awareness and exhibiting support is more crucial than before. This year's Fly the Flag for Palestine campaign is giving millions across the world the opportunity to show solidarity by displaying a Palestinian flag in person or online.
If we are not able to stand up at this hour of need and be supportive to those Palestinians by holding a flag on our car, on our shops, on our homes, then what are we good for? And when are we going to do this? And I think what I have seen, ordinary people responding so fantastically.
In the lead up to the annual Al-Quds rally in the British capital, the global support for the campaign is in full swing.
Organizers are encouraging participation in this year's event, and taking part could not be more simple. First of all, please post your image or your footage online, encourage a few friends to do the same, and of course, use the hashtag.
As the global solidarity movement grows, so does the opposition, a fact not lost on pro-Palestine campaigners.
We got ministers coming and saying, you know, they're going to refer us to the police for saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's outrageous. These are the same people that actually articulate that freedom of speech is absolute, and you know they go on and on. What's wrong with any part of the world to be free? What's wrong with asking people to be free?
So organizers are urging you to do your part. Lift your voice in solidarity and fly the flag for Palestine. Amina Taylor, London.
Yemen Civil Aviation and Meteorology Authority announced that the first commercial flight to Sana'a International Airport will start next Sunday from Anto, Jordan. Observers say the UN brokered agreement said there will be two flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan, and allowing one flight only is not enough to help the humanitarian situation.
Announcing the start of one flight per week to Jordan is not enough and confirms there are no sincere intentions by the Saudi-led coalition to abide by the declared UN truce. There must be a full opening of Sana'a Airport and the port of Hodeidah because the humanitarian situation cannot tolerate more restrictions.
The Ministry of Health says thousands of patients, including children, are in dire need to travel abroad for treatment. Therefore, the United Nations should fulfill its duty and remove any restrictions on the two weekly flights.
Yemeni patients suffer greatly due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport because they need to travel abroad for treatment. There are 30,000 registered patients in the higher medical committee, including children suffering from congenital anomalies and cancer. We demand the United Nations and the UN envoy open Sana'a's airport permanently and not for one or two flights per week, as it's not enough to help the humanitarian situation.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war on Yemen on March 2015 and imposed a closure on Sana'a International Airport. This closure has led to the death of thousands of patients, including children, especially amid the collapse of the healthcare system in the country due to the years-long Saudi war and the blockade. Yemen has received the news of resuming the flights of Sana'a International Airport with hopes to see further flights to other destinations around the world. They say opening Sana'a Airport will save the lives of thousands of Yemeni patients, including children, who are in danger amid the absence of essential healthcare services. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
For the first time since the onset of the COVID pandemic, hundreds of people of faith and none gathered in the shadow of North London's Finsbury Park Mosque to enjoy a breaking of the fast in a public setting. The iftar, backed by the local council and organised by Finsbury Park Mosque, Muslim Welfare House and British Muslim charity Islamic Relief, was an opportunity for the community to gather, celebrate and reflect.
It's good to show solidarity, Muslim, non-Muslim, Jews, Christian, all coming together to share a meal. This is a very powerful message that we are united, we are all at one despite our differences.
It's important because it's a very visible sign of the friendship and, you know, the togetherness that we have all through the year, actually. But and it's such lovely hospitality.
For me, it's an opportunity to, I suppose, show solidarity with my Muslim sisters and also, as Pauline said, take part in this wonderful experience.
It's no coincidence that this gathering is taking place during Ramadan, one of the most revered periods in the Islamic calendar, a time not just for abstention and reflection, but to help those who are less fortunate.
Ramadan is a time when we're always thinking about our friends, our family, our neighbours, our community at large. And I think it's one of those moments when we can all gather together, especially after the last couple of years when we haven't been able to do that.
The street iftar party was first organised in June 2017, just days after the terror attack in the Finsbury Park area on Muslim worshippers during the month of Ramadan that cost one man his life and injured nine others. The public iftar was a way for communities to show solidarity and silence hatred with hope.
Tonight, we celebrate. We celebrate the achievements of the Muslim community in this area. We celebrate and thank them for all that they do, and we enjoy a wonderful iftar supper.
This is in memory of our beloved brother Makram Ali, who lost his life in this incident, unfortunately. And we are here. We want to have it every year to, you know, remember what's happened and try to bring communities together after what's happened. And this is the main idea, is to bring us together, to say to those who try to divide us and spread hatred, fear and division that you will not succeed. We are together and we'll be always together. Islamophobia has no place in our society, and we should all fight it.
At a time of global disunity, one small corner of North London is showing there is another way. Amina Taylor, London.
The Journalists' Union in Damascus organized a ceremony to pay tribute to journalists who were killed in battlefields while reporting on the years-long war on Syria. Officials attending the ceremony praised the sacrifices of those journalists, who included reporters, cameramen, and employees of media outlets.
Syrian journalists had double the responsibility. They faced a ferocious war waged by huge media outlets on Syria. Journalists wrote their words in blood in respect of their job, homeland, and principles. We remain loyal to the blood of our martyrs.
It was unfortunately a long list of those who were killed, but a reminder of the sacrifices made for the sake of defending Syria. Families and relatives received certificates of appreciation, including one for Press TV correspondent Maya Nasser, who I proudly received it on behalf of his family.
This ceremony means a lot. It means that the martyrs are always remembered in the media outlets they work for. They sacrifice their lives for the sake of the country. We are proud of their sacrifices.
We used to miss him a lot, even when he was alive. He worked most of the time. After leaving for work for a whole month, we saw him once, and then he was killed. It's a nice gesture to honor him by the Journalists' Union.
Maya Nasser was killed by terrorists in 2012 while covering an attack on the Ministry of Defense in the Syrian capital. He was one of many journalists who was keen on being on front lines to deliver the truth and perform his duty. In Syria, tens of journalists fearlessly risked their lives, were injured or killed just to convey the truth amid a ferocious mainstream media campaign to distort the reality. Honoring those journalists underlines the crucial role the media plays in any war, especially nowadays. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the best of the names, In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It was a hugely anticipated ceasefire followed by a truce coming after 7 years of the Saudi onslaught, the truce being 2 months in duration, it was supposed to be. It was an opening for a political solution that seemed to have taken place, but Saudi Arabia could not keep its end of the bargain. After not opening Sana'a International Airport based on the ceasefire agreement, it was allowed to have one flight a week, but then it reneged on that also. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how this may spell the end of the Yemeni truce, and what chances there are for this truce to take shape in order to move into the political process. Well, let's find out more about what has occurred. Abdul Latif Shali is our correspondent who joins us from Yemen's capital, Sana'a. So what is the explanation that's been given at this point for this one flight a week, even for that to not happen?
Thank you so much. The Yemenis, since the beginning of this UN brokered truce, they have been knowing that the Saudi coalition will not commit or obey to the terms of the agreement. They said that the Saudi coalition is maybe trying to rearrange its ranks during this period of time, and they are now trying to just keep detaining the Yemeni fuel ships and also obstructing all the flights were supposed to be coming and getting out of Sana'a Airport. Today, patients were in the airport in the morning, and they were surprised that the Saudi coalition stopped this flight also, which is only one flight per week, and it's not even enough to help a few hundreds of people during the truce. Now it has passed almost 3 weeks, and the Yemenis did not use the airport. It was supposed to be opened since the first day of the truce, according to the agreement. And unfortunately, Saudi Arabia is only doing everything to undermine the truce. The spokesman of the Ansarullah movement, Muhammad Abu Salam, said earlier that the Saudi troops in Marib have conducted a few raids on the city and also have conducted a few military operations against the Yemeni army, but the Yemeni army did not do anything to save the agreement and also to make peace over the country. But unfortunately, the Saudis and all the troops inside the country are trying only to provoke the Yemeni army to launch further operations, whether inside the country or even against Saudi targets. But I believe if they kept just doing this and kept not obeying to the terms of the truce, the Yemeni army will absolutely launch operations, not only here inside the country, but also against maybe Saudi targets, and also Emirati targets will be included in the coming attacks.
Okay, so two key questions before I let you go. First, did they say until further notice? Did they give a date of when the flights would resume? And second key question here, you talked about the reaction by the Yemeni government. They've come out and said they're going to target either UAE or continue with the war. How much time frame did they allow to pass before they started their military operations or restart their military operations?
Two fuel ships are still detained by Saudi Arabia. Sana'a Airport is not opened until the moment. 3 weeks have passed until the moment and nothing happened. So the truce is with no benefit for the Yemeni people. Why would the Yemeni people keep telling the Yemeni government, the National Salvation Government, to keep holding this truce? They will all absolutely demand the Yemeni army, what they will demand the National Salvation Government to do something to provoke the Saudis or to stop the Saudis from detaining Yemeni oil vessels or opening Sana'a Airport. You know, the last attack against Aramco in Jeddah, that was what Yemenis believe that was the reason behind this truce. And if the Yemeni army have launched further attacks like that one in Jeddah, maybe also inside Emirati territories, this will push the kingdom and also the UAE to stop their war against the Yemeni people and lift the blockade. So now 3 weeks have passed and the truce is only for 2 months. So I don't know, maybe it will be for another week or 2 weeks until the Yemeni army say that the truce is with no benefit for the Yemeni people, and also that the Saudis and the Emiratis did not obey to the terms of the truce.
Thank you very much for that. That's Abdullah Thibault Bouchali, our correspondent there from Sana'a. Okay, let me introduce our guests for this edition of the Spotlight. Hamza Karim is a Yemeni writer and activist who joins us from Toronto. Also joining us is Brian Terrell, a political commentator and peace activist who joins us from Molloy, Iowa, I believe.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, great. Welcome to you both. Hamza Karim, let me first start with you. What is going on? You have this indefinite postponement for the flights coming out of Sana'a International Airport, which is the first in 7 years. And you have what was supposed to have been a flight to take, not for recreational use, passengers who needed medical care. So now the permit has been refused to be issued, which is a violation of this two-month truce. Why do you think this has happened?
I truly believe that Saudi Arabia, they don't have serious intentions in committing to any peace, agreements or even this truce that was supposed to last for 2 months. We've seen in the past, for the past 7 years, there have been some truces in place, but really Saudi Arabia wasn't serious about them. Now, what Saudi Arabia is saying is that the main reason that they haven't issued the permit is because, they're asking that all the passports for the passengers should be issued from Aden, which is controlled by them. And then the second issue I think that they're having is that most of the passengers that want to leave Yemen are, the war-wounded survivors. So, again, these are only excuses used by Saudi Arabia to continue blockading Yemen and increasing the suffering of Yemeni people. The truce for the past 3 weeks, we've seen, military actions have been are still taking places in various provinces like Marib, Hajjah, and Sa'dah. There have been over 100 violations since yesterday. The port, the Al-Hudaydah port, is not fully unblockaded. We have two oil ships that are still held by Saudis at Al-Hudaydah Airport or Jazan Port. They're held there, and they have over 10,000 tons of oil and gas that is really needed by Yemeni people to resume and live a normal life, needed by hospitals, needed by by the cars needed for transportation, needed by factories. So far, what we've seen is that Saudi Arabia really are not committed to the truce, or are not willing to go further to resume peace talks.
Brian Terrell, something's not making sense here. When you take a look at when the truce was announced, and, you know, it's not a truce that is the first time that was announced. You know, we've had truce announcements before. And this was followed by certain political steps also that we're going to get into in a bit. But we're having on multiple occasions Saudi-led coalition to have broken the truce. The airport, one instance, then you have the what we understand positions in Marib of the Yemeni armed forces to have been targeted. You have oil tankers that are being impounded. And it was announced on April the 2nd. And here we are. It's just a little over 3 weeks old. Why do you think Saudi Arabia is committing these violations?
Yeah, it's 3 weeks into this. And, you know, we've said it over and over again for so many years that this is a human catastrophe. This is an emergency, and it ought to be dealt with as an emergency. And the food, the situation now in Yemen with, exacerbated by the war in Ukraine, which provides 40% of Yemeni wheat. And now the food prices, just since this war started, has gone up 150% in Yemen, where most people can't afford the food and couldn't afford the food to begin with. So no, there's not goodwill here, and there's not goodwill on the part of the United States either. President Biden as a candidate parroted what everybody else is saying about the disaster of the war in Yemen and how barbaric it is and how it has to stop, and pledged U.S. cooperation with the Saudi effort would end. And in the first year of the Biden presidency, more than $1 billion worth of missiles sold to the Saudis. We're also seeing, I'm really happy to see that there's now a new effort by some people in the U.S. Congress to make a War Powers Resolution Act to stop the United States from cooperating with the Saudis. And this is something that the Democrats have done before. When Trump was president, and knowing that Trump would veto such a bill, and he did when it was passed. And now the Democrats largely are not behind this, and I think it's because it will force Biden into a situation where he'd have to either pass or veto such a bill. So yeah, and what's happening at the airport is like the idea that because some of the passengers don't carry passports from the Aden government, which in almost any way you want to look at it, doesn't exist anymore. You know, right after early this month, President Hadi was dismissed or stepped down, replaced by a presidential leadership council. It's a government that doesn't really exist, and any kind of negotiations, any real negotiations, with Yemen has to include the government that is actually in power, whether people like it or not. The Nasrallah government is the government of Yemen, and there can't be any resolution without recognizing that and recognizing their passports, being able to talk at high levels with them. It's absurd to think that any steps forward can be made without that.
All right. Well, let's, since you mentioned the U.S. and at the end there, you're talking about that presidential council. Let's talk about the U.S. If we can, Hamza Karim. I'm looking at the statement made very recently by the U.S. President Joe Biden on this, of which he has said that he has welcomed the agreement, but he said the terms of the ceasefire was just the first step. Again, I'm looking to see where this went wrong. Do you think that there was any kind of pushback by the U.S., change of mind by the U.S., then relate to Saudi Arabia? Because we know that the U.S. is trying to, one way or another, whether Joe Biden likes it or not, trying to claw its way back into the Saudis' liking, based on some reports. Do you think maybe the U.S. instigated a change of mind on the part of Saudi Arabia?
Absolutely. I think Saudi Arabia in this war they haven't been really, you know, driving or leading this war. We all know that Saudi Arabia can't make any moves, especially like these big moves, without a green light from the U.S. administration. Now, you know, if we all remember, this truce came after the attack that happened in Aramco in Jeddah, and we all know that back then and even now, U.S. cannot stand you know, seeing the gas prices going up and do nothing about it. The war in Ukraine right now is already driving the prices of gas up, and they can't take seeing the prices going even more. So I think there was some pressure on Saudi Arabia to really at least absorb some of the anger that is happening in the international community and inside Yemen because of this war, really rearrange their themselves in Yemen and trying to get all the groups that are fighting for Saudi Arabia and UAE and US together and really get their ducks in a row to go back to this war again. For me, I don't see US really being very serious about stopping this war in Yemen. If they were very serious about it, they would have, you know, stopped selling arms to Saudi Arabia. They would have really just stopped providing them with all the intelligence and the logistics to continue this war. But so far, we haven't seen any serious steps or taking place by the U.S. So definitely, U.S. Is not happy and are not willing to really stop this war. We haven't seen any serious actions. So I definitely agree that since the beginning of this truce, Saudi Arabia and U.S. weren't serious. They were just trying to buy some time to get their ducks in a row, to rearrange themselves, and to go back into this war.
Okay, well, let's go through the motions here as to where this stood in terms of the Presidential Council, or excuse me, Presidential Leadership Council, Brian Terrell. On April 7th, this was sworn in before the parliament in Aden, okay, and there they announced that they were going to negotiate with the Ansarullah movement for a permanent ceasefire, which then we were looking at the two-month ceasefire that came into, or truce, that was announced. And then we went through that show about Hadi transferring powers to the council. Of course, many are deducting that the Saudi Crown Prince fired him, pretty much. But then we're looking at the representation of power, where there's an equal distribution of power between the countries north and south. And then you have the council, which includes the prominent leader of the SDC, the Southern Transitional Council, supported by Saudi Arabia and also as coalition part of the UAE. I went through this in order to ask you whether there was a change of heart or something that did not now stand well with Saudi Arabia in terms of the composition of the Leadership Council or the way that this went down. What do you think?
No, I really don't know about that. I think what's interesting is the Hadi government was the reason that the justification that Saudi Arabia gave to begin with to be in Yemen at all in the first place. So with that gone, what, you know, it kind of takes the chair out from under the Saudis and their excuse. Yeah, I think that there is a you know, there is a fear that the Saudis have and the United States has that peace might break out, and if this Presidential Leadership Council shows any promise of really negotiating, you know, with the Houthi government and really coming to an end to this this war and this horrible starvation. That will be stopped. That will not be tolerated by the Saudis or the United States. This is, you know, this is a cash cow. And the rising of the gas prices, as our friend said, is a very big issue here. While the gas prices are going up, the profits for the oil companies are going up too. So the anger needs to be assuaged, but we don't want to start bringing the prices down either. You know, the planet is in really bad shape, and we're in danger of catastrophic climate change. And all this time, all these you know, these months that should be used, the research, the resources that should be put into finding alternatives to fossil fuels, instead are going toward this war. And we're seeing in the United States, the Biden administration is not only allowing for more more permits to drill and to frack, you know, to use U.S. Oil and gas to counteract what's being boycotted from with the Russians.
Right.
We're putting everything is being set back, and the world is being put. We need to do something very, very different.
Sure.
We need to do it quick. The people of Yemen are suffering, and they're dying now. And mass starvation is real. But the whole planet needs the Saudis and the United States and everybody, the Russians, to change its course.
Sure. Well, this Presidential Leadership Council, Hamza Karim, I'm curious as to whether this was going to work anyways. Because if you want to take a look at the way that the leadership was going to be, it was very murky as to what type of influence could the Saudi side have when we know on the ground it is the Ansarullah currently and the Yemeni government who have the support from the people. I mean, who does Saudi Arabia have or can put in place there for any type of reconciliation to happen? That's always been a big question mark.
Yeah, just to give you a bit of background about this Presidential Leadership Council. So what Saudi Arabia did alongside with UAE, and backed by the U.S., of course, is trying to group all the groups in ground in Yemen that had problems and even fought and killed each other in the past. There are some groups who are aligned with the UAE. Some of them are aligned with Saudi Arabia. So what they tried to do is put all these groups together. Now, these groups, the members of these groups, they all have power in ground, except for the president of this of the Presidential Leadership Council. But so what they're trying to do is basically get all these groups together and make them sit down and really work as a team. But we've seen this for the past 7 years. This did not work. These groups, they fought with each other. They killed each other in Aden, in Marib, in Shabwa, in many provinces. And but I think there is some kind of pressure now on them to come together and work under one leadership. But I don't think this is going to work because all these groups have their own agendas. They all have their own plans. They want to they want to control some certain areas in Yemen. And it's very hard to bring them all together under one umbrella and put a one leadership for them all. So in my opinion, I don't see this is working because, they all have different agendas. They all have different objectives. They all have different visions. And it's very hard to put them all together in one table.
Well, then what are we looking at, Brian Terrell, if this thing falls apart, which is unfortunately going in that direction? What type of direction is this thing going to go, which we're looking at the threat that the Ansarullah movement and the Yemeni government has made, is that they're going to again go through targeting Saudi Arabia and the UAE?
Yeah, that's it doesn't look good in this council by the very fact that it was pretty much appointed and put in place by the Saudis means it's going to fail. The Saudis do not hold the key to solving the problems of Yemen, and neither does the United States. I hate to see it. It looks, as our friend says, it seems inevitable that the Saudi military is going to react as militaries do and as governments do, and under the provocations that it's facing. And it's not going to go well for the people of Yemen either. Because the Saudi, the UAE, and the United States, and our different allies are definitely stronger than the Yemenis have proven themselves very bravely and very and used a lot of ingenuity with its limited weaponry, but in the end, by sheer firepower, this is not going to be a military solution. It's not going to be a military solution that's imposed by the United States or Saudi Arabia, and it's not going to be a military solution that comes out of the the Ansarullah government either. The promise that this showed of a negotiated end to the war is, as it falls apart, is all the more bitter because in the end, that's the only thing that's going to happen. Someday it's going to happen. And how many people are going to have to die before then? Because there isn't any solution. Nothing will happen unless there's really good faith efforts for all parties to sit down and negotiate an end. And we have not seen any goodwill on the part of the Saudi Arabia or U.S., the UAE, the other coalition partners. It doesn't look good for the near future. We have to, our hope has to be a little farther out, and our prayers are with the people of Yemen. And as an American, my apologies are just so heartfelt, and I feel so bad about what our government's been doing to the people of Yemen and people all over the world.
All right, we're going to end it there. We are fresh out of time. Thank you for that, Brian Terrell, political commentator and peace activist. Hamza Karim, thank you, Yemeni writer and activist. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
Thank you. I am now in Tehran, standing by the Chitgar River. When you live in a busy, crowded city like Tehran, then walking by this artificial river could be very enjoyable. Of course, nothing is like a natural scenery. It's been for a long time that I haven't had a tour to the beautiful nature of Iran, and honestly, I really miss those amazing sceneries. So, today I'm going to take a tour to Bandar-e-Mahshahr in southern Iran in order to visit the beautiful region of Khor-e-Musa. I'm sure you'll like it. Khor-e-Musa is one of the firths of the Persian Gulf. Khor, literally firth, means a long, narrow indentation of the seacoast. Khor-e-Musa is a triangular firth northwest of the Persian Gulf. Khor-e-Musa is 20 to 50 meters deep. However, its depth reaches 73 meters in some points. This depth has made it possible for the ships weighing up to 70,000 tons to easily move along this canal. Khor-e-Musa has small branches on its western side. The oil tankers which move toward Bandar Imam Khomeini have to sail through Khor-e-Musa. This canal is one of the most important natural canals of Iran. North of this canal, there are Bandar Imam Khomeini, Bandar Mahshahr, Sarbandar, and Petrochemical Special Economic Zone of Mahshahr. I am now at Bandar Mahshahr. The weather is pleasant, though a little bit humid. Khor-e-Musa is connected to the Persian Gulf, and I feel really excited to see it. Here's the magnificent Persian Gulf. The smell that comes from the Persian Gulf is the most pleasant scent I've ever experienced in whole of my life. Here we have the Persian Gulf and Khor-e-Musa. Let's get closer to the sea. Actually, Khor-e-Musa has a diverse flora and fauna. The fauna includes humpback dolphins, flamingos, crested terns, sternidaes, small crabs, and fish of different types, as well as lots of beds of different types, which are hard to count. Because of its unique nature, Khor-e-Musa is an ideal tourist attraction for nature lovers. Oh my God, look at there! Several dolphins are playing at a far distance. I have to ride in a boat in order to see them very well. Dolphins don't approach the seacoast. The reflection of the sun ray on the dolphin's skin makes you think that each time that one of them jumps out of the water, a piece of gold is jumping. Oh, I can't take my eyes off all the beauties of the Persian Gulf. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB.